CliffCentral.com.
All right. Yes. Good morning, everybody. We're live on a Tuesday morning. We're alive. Not we are live. We are alive on a Tuesday morning. We are here to keep you company, make your day a little bit happier, I hope. Look at this. Coming at you on the internet of many things, including the ability to converse freely and laugh and talk a whole lot of crap. Magnificent, isn't it?
And watch.
Wonderful. Sorry, Sia, what did you say?
And watch cat videos.
And watch cat videos. Very important.
The internet is very important for that.
That is how you know you're free, how many cat videos you can watch. Yes, I'm joined by Mbulelo Tinta and by Pumelele Mashiko and Sia Sangweni and you this morning. So thanks for waking up to be a part of this. You know, some people do. They don't just listen to the podcast. Some people, we are there at 6 a.m. together, all of us. And look at it. It seems to be working.
It's so inspiring for me.
Is it, Pums?
When I see that, always, when I see it, I'm like, these people, who are these people tweeting us at this,
I know,
at this hour?
This ungodly moment in what should be... Which, especially since we're all at home now, this should be something we can do at any time. I mean, Rena, who works with me, has always said, why did you choose to put your show at 6 a.m.? You could have done it in the afternoon.
That's a good point.
You know, there is, and the people who wake up with us this time in the morning know, there's an advantage to being up before everybody else. You know stuff. You find stuff out before everybody else. Mm-hmm. It almost you feel like you're ahead of the curve. That's what there is to it. Something
else. You should get a prize for sleeping.
Like, yes.
Oh, I've got my 8 hours for today. It's the right thing. Like, everyone can sleep. Like,
don't get Arianna Huffington in a huff.
But doesn't she believe in an
8-hour day? She says you've got to sleep. Yeah. She says you've got to sleep for a couple of hours every night.
No, I got into bed like an old man last night at, 7? Which is a record early for me.
Wow.
Yeah, but here's the problem. So I go to sleep. And I knew this was going to happen when I did it. I should have just pushed through, but I couldn't help it. I was tired. So I thought, I'm going to go to sleep. And then I woke up at 9:30. And guess what? Couldn't get to sleep until 1. But that always happens. And I'm not the only one. This happens to lots of people. So,
but when you have had enough sleep, you should just get up. And also now that we're like working from home, or whatever, for those of us who are, you should not be. I told you this at the beginning of the lockdown. I completely untethered myself from the clock, right? So now, if it's like 2 in the morning, and I'm awake. I do whatever. I read, I look at what's on the internet,
and
check out the podcast.
Do it your way.
Damn straight.
But that's on a very liberating. Serious note, do people think they're going to live forever? I don't understand the notion of sleeping forever. Like, soon, 60... If you're 30 now, you got probably about 40 good years left, and then you're taking a slide down. Is get up and do something.
Here's another piece of musical genius. I've already given you my way. So here's, you live while you're alive, asleep while you're dead. You can always sleep when you're dead.
That's it.
Don't know that song.
And forever's a long time.
Such rubbish.
Well,
no, that's absolute rubbish, guys. Absolute rubbish. I love my sleep. I do love the, I'm sleeping in and I'm sleeping late if it's the weekend.
Saturday, I also did whatever I wanted during the day. I didn't have any set agenda. And then at night on Saturday, I went to sleep reasonably late and woke up nice and late Sunday morning. It's the best feeling. Mm-hmm. But enough about this nonsense. Let's turn to...
No, because it's winter, guys, with the blankets, with the proper, like, blankets and the...
No, I'm with Tommy. Bend the rules because you are in lockdown and you're at home anyway. I mean, you work when you want to. If you want to work at 3 a.m, work at 3 a.m.
True.
Jean says, I'm awake. You're all going to get me through my run in the dark and cold. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much, Jean. Okay, well, good for you, Jean. She's doing a run in the cold. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that inspiring?
Jean, kudos to you, but isn't that... That makes me so anxious. And I've tried to be that person.
Everything makes you anxious, yeah.
Also, good point. But I've tried to be that person who goes for a walk with headphones or earphones in, and I can't. Aren't you fearful of, like, someone coming up behind you, or maybe you're on the pavement and there's a car that you don't hear hooting and is about to run you over? Oh,
The car shouldn't be on the pavement.
Well, you know what? You shouldn't also have a bullet in your skull. But, well, when it happens, it happens.
What did you say to Sienna? Did you say he's a ninny? What did you say?
No, I said he sounds like a granny. Like, I had my headphones on, and I went for a walk. And then I saw Susan, and you won't believe it. Her husband's got alopecia, and then it's unbelievable. Have you seen the new spa? There's a new manager. Gerald's gone. And now Gerald's...
You know what? I'd rather be Susan Stormy and alive than to wear headphones or earphones, and then next thing I'm abducted by aliens.
Well, here are some more messages. Wow. This is from Michelle. She says, I'm one of those people who's here with you every morning. My day can't start without a chat with all of you. Show feels like a conversation. Thank you, Michelle. I think that's the plan. Here's another one. Lunchtime with Cliff Central has been up for hours in Perth. It's 12 noon where I am. This is from Janine. Isn't that cool? So there's Janine in Australia who listens to us, but for her it's lunchtime. Knock, knock, who's there? Woohoo, why are you so excited? Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. Sia, you just want people to come up behind you, says Greg.
Greg.
Wow.
Yes,
wow.
But also no.
Oh, wow.
Here's an interesting fantasy from Woody, who's got some pretty bizarre ideas. Woody says, if I die, I don't want to sleep forever. I want to be reincarnated as a bird so that I can shit every morning on my neighbor's car.
Wow.
Wow.
That takes revenge to a whole new level. Once you take revenge to the afterlife, you need to reassess what you're feeling.
Yeah.
I like it.
So there are plenty of people wake up early and get things done. It's not just Jean and Bulelo. So lots of messages from those people. So Pums, what's going on with Kanejo at the moment? How's school?
Oi.
What do you mean, oi?
How many days?
Yeah.
Only you guys can hear that.
14 days.
Turn off the mic.
Oh, no.
Okay, cool. No.
14 days.
How's Kanejo?
So this morning...
Yeah?
12 going on 30.
Yeah?
We're currently obsessed, as you know, following our Hamilton weekend, obsessed with all things American Constitution and Founding Fathers.
Fantastic. Oh. What a thing to be interested in at that age.
And currently trying to figure out, you know, so the scandal, you know, the scandal that actually like brought down Hamilton was the scandal about the woman. Yes. He was having an affair with.
That's right.
And the fact that her husband knew and extorted Hamilton for $1,000.
Which was a lot of money in those days.
I can't find a picture of him anywhere, and he's quite distraught. He's quite distraught that he can't find a picture of this guy anywhere. And nobody has anything more to say about him. All the stuff about her, Marie Reynolds, but nothing about James Reynolds. Anyway.
And you mean he wasn't on Facebook?
Crazy. 12 going on 30, I tell you.
It's amazing. What a thing to be interested in, though.
Even the Smithsonian doesn't have a thing about him. Even the Smithsonian doesn't have anything about him. No pictures, nothing. The man is a figment of everybody's imagination as far as Kanego is concerned.
Speaking of being interested in things, I sometimes go down the rabbit hole, especially when I'm lying in bed and I can't get to sleep. So I got on my phone. I ended up watching, I don't know how this even came to me. I ended up watching an hour-long interview with Katharine Hepburn, the actress.
Oh.
There was a YouTube interview. Well, it was obviously on TV in the day. But Katharine Hepburn, the actress, was interviewed about her career and everything else. Famously, this woman didn't give a lot of interviews. She was very anti the press. She kind of ignored them wherever she could. She actually was famous for like smashing photographers' cameras if they came near her. She never went to restaurants. She was very much one of those original Hollywood. I mean, she's regarded as one of the top three actresses in Hollywood history. You know, her, Betty Davis, and Greta Garbo.
Okay.
So she was Hollywood royalty. She came from this very wealthy family in New England. Her father was a urologist at the, I think it was, where was it? It was somewhere in New Haven or something like that. And she, her mother was a strident feminist, which in those days was extraordinary. I mean, Katharine Hepburn, she died in her 80s in, you know, the last half of the 21st of the 20th century. So her mother was born in the mid 1800s and she was a feminist. She was, you know, she used to march with Pankhurst and those people. So Katharine Hepburn was one of the original kind of equal rights for men and women protesters. And she was a fiercely independent woman. She negotiated her own contracts. She was absolutely incredible. And this interview was fascinating. I mean, she basically granted this guy the right to ask her just about anything. But she was so in control of the interview the whole way through. I was mesmerized. I found myself falling in love with Katharine Hepburn. And it got me thinking, what is it about certain people that makes them a star? What is that special ingredient? And it's something that I used to wrestle with a lot on Idols, because we were obviously always looking for a star, you know. And I watched this Katharine Hepburn, and her eyes would flash, and she'd smile, and she'd giggle a little bit at the right moments. And she was just extraordinary. I fell in love with her. This woman in a... She must have already been in her 60s or 70s at that point. But, you know, I looked back at pictures of her after the interview, and I thought, what an absolutely amazing woman.
Wow.
Just, yeah, phenomenal. And then after watching her interview, I wanted to know what made Betty Davis so famous. And so I watched a video of her. And, you know, eventually you just like, I've got to try and get to sleep. But wow, her eyes. There was an interview I watched with her and Michael Parkinson, where she was obviously also a substantially much older lady.
Oh, wow.
But what an incredible woman that was, too. You know, despite the fact that Hollywood was really a boys' club, and in those days women were objects, and, you know, they had to conform to a certain thing. Those three women, Garbo, Hepburn, and Betty Davis, were just runaway successes, and they did command such control over the men around them, and not just the men around them, like the world. Those three women had the world at their feet in every way, and they didn't have to do anything they weren't comfortable with. Despite what we hear about Hollywood now and how women have to be a certain weight and they have to be a certain height and they have to look a certain way. And, you know, you've heard all these stories from starlets now who say, oh, Hollywood's just this manipulative place. But those three women, in spite of being in the most manipulative time during Hollywood's history, were so strong. They were so self-aware. They were so just independent and strong-willed, and I found the whole thing just fascinating. I think I may end up being absorbed into these stories again.
But all those things are also the things that made them so magnetic.
Oh, sure.
Right? All the the nuances of all the difference that they had and were, and the fact that we're able to use, I mean, you talk about interviews with people who are stars by that age. By that age, Catherine has been in front of the camera for so many years. She knows exactly how to manipulate that medium. She knows exactly how to use it to every part of what it is that she's trying to say or do. It's like you on the microphone, right? You've been behind the microphone for so long. You know the inflections in your voice and when to say what and how to make it an alluring experience. That's what they were too.
But like, yes, go ahead, Mbulela.
Her tables at home were probably, that's all it ever was, right? Is those types of people, especially back then, it was probably philosophers and actors and actresses around all the time. So she imbibed that, whether she liked it or not, anyway. So she was in training probably from 5, 6. It wasn't like she had to wait to become an actress. Her life was pageantry, you know?
But here's the interesting thing is her family kind of looked down on her a little bit because she was an actor, you know, because acting was still considered a menial profession. And her father was a surgeon and he wanted her to be a doctor, but she realized that being a woman and being a surgeon wasn't going to turn out very well. And she said it, you know, even now it's hard for women who are surgeons. And she was right. But this incredible, because we tend to view history and we tend to think it's very one-dimensional, that, you know, here's the interesting story. I mean, her parents' dinner tables were filled with people like Noel Coward, and they were massive fans of George Bernard Shaw and people like that, who to them were the icons. So when she grew up, you know, George Bernard Shaw was this incredible, towering intellectual. Orson Welles, these were people who she knew. She knew them personally. So there was such a confidence in the way that she spoke. She was just unflappable. I watched this interview thinking, this woman's bomb-proof. Nothing can scare her. Nothing can frighten her. There's no way any man can take charge of this woman's life or could ever have. And I mean, she famously dated Spencer Tracy for a very long time. I think she wanted to marry him, but she'd been married earlier. And she admitted that she'd used the man that she married early. Because she was a young girl, but she needed to get into the movie business. And she married this guy because he was wealthy. And she says, I was terrible. I abused him, basically, because I used his money and his contacts to get into Hollywood. So she used a man, just like usually a man uses a woman. It's interesting because these role reversals and the story of people like that is just, it's just so much deeper and more complex than we give it credit for. So I found myself just wholly obsessed with these Hollywood women last night.
And the thing about a really good interview is it gives you a glimpse into behind the facade. It gives you a glimpse into the person. Yes. Because, again, you know, the actresses or musicians, and they're used to having a role. So we are all aware that the person you are seeing on that screen is not necessarily who they are. And that is, we have a good interview with that. You get to meet the person behind all of those characters. You get to meet the person that brings all those characters to life on a page. I'm going to send you a link to one of my favorite interviews with Nina Simone, who was also a hectic person to watch being interviewed. And yes, and incredibly vocal and confident about who she is. And when you listen to that music, when you listen to the music that she makes and the politics of it and the consciousness of it, and then when you see her being interviewed, my God,
well,
what an
there's an interesting there's an interesting
experience,
interesting story that goes along with that. It seems to me that the people who are the most difficult to interview are the real stars. People who are easy,
difficult in what way?
Because people who are easy to interview are trying to please you in the interview as the interviewer. And I've interviewed a lot of people. The ones who are intimidating to the interviewer, in other words, who are the real big stars, are always so difficult. The most important people in the world are hard to interview because it's almost like the interviewer is trying to impress them, first of all. But second of all, they don't care about anything you're going to ask them. They have no fear whatsoever. So if you think about it, Nina Simone, Katharine Hepburn, Robert De Niro, who's famously difficult to interview, Prince Philip, who's married to the Queen, is impossible to interview. Impossible. He basically makes it like an obstacle course for the person interviewing him. And these
oh
are all
goodness.
These are all the most difficult people in the world to actually have a conversation with in terms of being an interviewer because there's so much pressure. I love it. Those are the people I'm really fascinated by, not the ones who are like, well, let me tell you about my childhood. The ones who they go, I don't think you could. I don't think you're in a position to ask me that. And the interviewer, you know, is in the back of their feet the whole time. Fuck, I love watching those. Yes, I love watching those people.
What an answer.
They make it awkward. Like, there was a point in the interview I was watching where this guy, and he was a really good interviewer. He was some New Zealander or Australian. By all accounts, a good interviewer at his time and well-known. I forget his name, Clive something or another. But she's busy answering a question. He's asking her basically about her elder brother who hanged himself, and it could have been an accident. And he knows he's treading on dangerous turf here because she just shuts down questions she doesn't want to answer, right? Because she's just such a powerful creature. She's just this lightning bolt of a human being. And she's sitting there in front of him, and he goes, well, you don't have to answer this, but and I may be treading on dangerous territory here, but your brother and you know, the accident. She goes, well, you know, father always said it was an accident. And she starts talking and he knows he's like, got to shut the fuck up here because she's actually talking about this incident, which she's never done before. And as she goes down, he asks one other question. He's like, but you found him. And you see, she just decides, okay, that's enough. You've had enough. I've let you in, but now you're asking too many questions. And she goes, oh, well, I don't know about that, and neither do you, and maybe that's better.
Ooh.
And it just, you know, she's so in charge of the whole thing. I love it. It's just so amazing to see. Anyway, I've seen that a couple of times. Yeah, she's the star. And he asks her about being a star, and she goes, oh, I don't know. She goes, I don't think of myself as a star. I'm just lucky to be born at a time where this, and she points at herself, where this is valuable to some people. But at that moment, it's like an electric current runs through everything because she looks at the camera and you're like, Jesus Christ, she really is a fucking star. You're like, there's lightning in a bottle. There's something magic that happens in that moment because she knows she's a star and we know she's a star. And the fact that she denies it just makes her a bigger star. It's just so great. Anyway, so you can hear I'm a little bit in love.
Good for you.
Oh, it is wonderful.
Yeah, and I totally get
the most wonderful thing about.
Yeah. Most wonderful thing about.
What's the most wonderful thing about is we started out the show talking about how wonderful it is to be on the internet because we can be in everybody's homes.
Yeah.
From our own homes.
Right.
That's the thing about the internet. That's why the rabbit holes, you know, you can sit on YouTube for hours and hours and find all these gems. If you can imagine that, I mean, as 10 future short years ago, you couldn't have seen that interview because you missed it when it was on TV.
Yeah, correct.
Because it's in New Zealand,
Pumi, the internet, your internet is shocking this morning. It sounds like you're on the lowest quality line in the history of humanity.
Is it?
Yeah. Don't know what's going on with you.
Okay, well, let me see if I can. Yep. Let me. I'm going to
exit and come back.
Yeah, okay. I'll go and see if I can figure it out. Can come back.
You must thank Janet Jackson and her boob for us being able to see all of these interviews now.
Yeah, there we go.
That's how YouTube came to be.
That's exactly right. That was
everyone wanted to see Janet's boob after the Super Bowl.
100% correct. All right. While we are waiting for Pumi to rejoin us, let us get into the headlines for this morning. It is 6:30. CliffCentral.com. You want to know what's happening? The five things you need to know are these. Number one, attempts to discuss VBS-linked leaders are on hold as the ANC-NWC meeting was postponed. How convenient. Pums, you're back. So
I am. How's this?
The ANC's working committee meeting, which was expected to hear fierce debates about the reinstatement of two Limpopo leaders linked to the VBS heist, was postponed on Monday. Members were told it was due to unforeseen circumstances. I wonder. Minister in the presidency, Jackson Tembu, announced via a statement that Mantashe had been hospitalized following the advice of a family doctor. While no agenda was set for the day's scheduled meeting, some in the NWC had hoped to use the session to put the reinstatement of Limpopo's provincial deputy chairperson, Florence Radzilani, and treasurer Danny Msiza back on the table. Yeah, the ANC really just unable to deal with how to discipline its own members. Unable.
And they just don't have to explain any further. No, it was unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah, they just postponed the meeting.
Okay.
And I'm happy to put it on record that Gwede's hospitalization, I'm almost certain, is similar to what we discussed with Thabo Mbeki last year. I have it on good authority. I know somebody who frequents an elderly family member who frequents the bottle with him. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
These are state secrets.
Just so you know, I don't want anybody going COVID or.
But it is COVID. They said that they were diagnosed, him
I'm
and his wife.
I'm sure. You hate to hear it.
I would hate for Mbulelo to know anything unbecoming about me.
He's already told us everything he knows about you, Sia.
I would hate for it because he would just lay it on thick and not care about your dignity at all in the process. So, you know, that Sia guy, let me tell you about his adult diaper need.
I've done so much shameful stuff that, you know, it's out there. I'm not like shy with it. So if you're going to do stuff, just put it out there.
Because you don't sleep enough.
On a much more personal note, this is in the headlines, but it's certainly something that all of us feel. I got this update last night. Well-loved rugby commentator Kaunda Ntunja is being remembered as a leading pioneer. He died on Monday in East London at the age of 38. Guys, Kaunda had a show on cliffcentral.com. Kaunda was there at the very beginning. He was on our first sports show, along with Tony Ndoro, and there were some other characters who came in and out during the course of that show.
Terry Taran.
That's right.
Temba.
But Kaunda was always this really big character, and I remember him very fondly. He made me laugh a lot of the time. Just an incredible Osa commentator on rugby. He broke down some walls there. He was really an extraordinary guy and had such a knowledge of the game. First black South African schools captain. He made rugby accessible to everyone by using Xhosa. Kaunda was unmatched when it came to commentary, especially on television. He was able to bring a game alive no matter how boring it was. He would find nicknames, names and verbs. He'd done all of those things on Curry Cup and Super Sport level. And that was what Robert Marawa had to say about him. So, yes, our love and our condolences to Kaunda's family in the Eastern Cape. His sister, Tando, who announced the tragic news on social media on Monday morning. But I'm just shocked. 38 years old. Sure.
He made my father watch Springbok rugby for the first time in his life. And my father is no fan of the Springbok itself. But,
really?
Yeah. No, and my dad's he's a tough to please guy. But he, because when he was SA schools captain, first time ever my father would watch the
amazing
the Springboks, which is, yeah, he was a guy.
We haven't heard about the cause of death here, so I'm just going to put that up front. But if it is something corona related, I had this thought yesterday of, we might not know someone in our immediate family, for example, or our social circle who might have the virus or pass away. But the past couple of days to me is teaching me that we're going to see many more deaths, even in the public eye, and that we've had this like attraction or connection with, and we're still going to have to deal with that regardless. Some of our favorite musicians or big, you know, legends or, you know, politicians or role models that you've looked up to. And that's just the sad and striking reality of what we're facing now. That just hit me yesterday.
Yeah, but if it wasn't COVID, it would be something else. I mean, you know,
true.
People die, so I'm not going to let COVID have the credit on this.
Gareth, regardless of what you think about COVID and its impact, I think the worst thing, and I actually tweeted about this the other day after I heard about Munin, is, for me, it's the fact that it is relentless. So one of the things that is going to happen to all of us with COVID is people do die, Gareth, but we often have long tracks of time within which to deal with it. However, what we're seeing now is we're seeing every single day for some people, somebody very close being snatched away. So, you know, a week and a half ago, a friend of mine's brother, on Saturday, Munin. Yesterday,
Tawunda.
Not Tawunda, but an actor, Alan Boy.
Oh,
right?
Right. Okay.
So very, very well-known black actor who actually, I grew up, so he's from the same area as my grandmother. So, you know, it's a face I know very well from my childhood, not just on TV, but down the road. A friend of my mom's from our neighborhood. That's that level of relentlessness of people being snatched away is different to people die. It's the constant, it's the closeness, it's the every single day a new person. And just that it's also because of the internet, because of how interconnected we are, you don't hear about it once a week because you're reading the Sowetan and it's got all of the announcements of the people who've passed that week. You hear about it every single day, people tweeting RIP. That's the level at which it's going to mess with all of our minds.
So as
and
it
not
comes
give us time, not give us time to mourn.
But as it comes into our lives, somebody said I was too crass last night about it. She was talking in similar lines as Pumi says. And I said to her, well, for me, it's quite interesting. Are people going to do more stuff now? Like, why are you feeling more trauma now? Is it because you're like, oh, life is finite? Like, why weren't you thinking that before? Why is this making it more visceral? And she said I was being too crass, but I'm like, yeah, do more stuff. Because most of the trauma is about the people themselves, not the people dying, is what I'm noticing. So for me, it's like, because death happens every day. Now it's like, is it because it's in our face? And then what I'm starting to pick up is the narrative is more about, oh my gosh, what about my life? What if it's too short?
It's always about me.
It's also about the fact that it is also about the fact that what has been snatched away from all of us is the rituals we have always had
like
to allow us to mourn. So where, you know, Jewish people will sit shiva for 7 days post the funeral, or with black families where you have a week or so where you're relentlessly in this mourning, this reiteration, this period of comforting one another and each other and yourself, and sits with your grief and having all of that time to deal with it. We don't have that now. So when you do have a person that passes off COVID, you've got 3 hours. You must put them in 2 feet of wretched earth. You know, You don't have the opportunity to mourn the way we've always mourned.
Mm-hmm.
People cannot come up to you and hug you. You cannot have all of the people you want at the funeral speaking and comforting you and remembering the person. Everybody's got to do it all over the place and far away from each other. That's what makes it so horrendous right now. That's what makes us so lost, is we don't even have the comforts we've always had to deal with a relentless taking away of people we love.
All right. I do have to move on to some other headlines, as much as I agree with you. Yeah, so even though I don't give you time to mourn, I also don't give you time to talk about this because we've got to get to the other headlines.
Sure.
So Prasa, I know you love these people, Pumi. Prasa is promising to strengthen security at its train stations after some have suffered losses due to theft and vandalism. The railway agency said, listen to this, it's planning to recruit 3,000 security officials. They cancelled contracts with some security companies due to bad service. The agency also suspended some because they were colluding with people to damage infrastructure. You mean that there's a plan to damage infrastructure?
Yeah, it's called Prasa.
So apparently the spokesperson for Prasa, Makosini Mgitwa, said Administrator Bongisizwe Mpondo will make an announcement to reveal the details soon. But it sounds like they really are just trying to save what little infrastructure they still have and that we've already paid for as taxpayers, because there is a concerted effort to destroy some of this stuff. In other news, former Environmental Affairs Minister Nomvula Mokonyane was in front of the State Capture Commission. She was talking about her former Bosasa, the allegations leveled against her by former Bosasa COO Agritsi. Testifying before the State Capture Inquiry, Mokonyane said she'd never received cash payments or gifts. But we know that she had boxes of meat delivered to her house. So she denies it. She says it's nonsense. He alleged, of course, the former minister received 50,000 rand a month in cash. In cash from Bosasa.
How much in cash?
Expensive alcohol and meat was also delivered. 50 grand in cash a month.
How do you get that in cash? Is it delivered in a suitcase like you see in the movies?
50 grand is not that much. You can carry 50 grand in... it's a little brick. It's a little brick of money. It's not even that much.
In a Louis Vuitton bag.
Mm. You can carry 50 grand in a Louis Vuitton bag.
That's probably what she wanted along with the money. She says, of course, it's nonsense. She says, I've never benefited or received goods to the benefit of my family. She said that after 16 December, her family would normally go on holiday and only return on the 30th. I never received cash from Gavin Watson, nor through Agritsi. She said that she's never had a meeting with Agritsi at her house or the Bosasa offices. She told the commission there was no wooden staircase at the house, as described by him, adding the former Bosasa CEO was lying about knowing the features of her house. Asked by Zondo why he would go to such lengths to make these allegations, she said, I think the extent of the desperate acts of Mr. Agritsi goes beyond just the description of the house. The very fact that he thinks a movement as old as the ANC can actually be dependent on a Nomvula for it to remain a popular organization that has earned being a leader of society smacks of his ignorance and naivety.
Oh.
Geez, she's coming back strong. She added, I also think whatever's happened between him and Gavin, he's at pains to really not only tarnish Gavin by looking for people who at that particular time and even now, their names have been tarnished both in the media as well as perception that has been branded about them. It's hard to follow what Nomvula Mokonyane's, her logical kind of thought patterns are, but she certainly does not sound like she is going down without a fight and denies that she ever received those boxes and bags of meat that he says were delivered to her house. Although I think that is precisely the kind of deal that makes this sound, the detail rather, not deal, that makes this sound like it could have some veracity. Because she does seem like the kind of person who would ask for a box of meat every month.
And I just think there are too many details and too much explaining. No. I don't have wooden staircases anymore because, well, with 50,000 rands, I was able to do renovations at my house. And now that's what it's meant to really be.
And let's not forget that under her guidance as minister, the Department of Water and Sanitation has become completely bankrupt. There is nowhere any money that she didn't manage to pass to other people or let other people pass to themselves while she was in charge of that department. So there's much explaining left to be done by Minister Nomvula Mokonyane. Not by any means, even if you take the Basasa part out of it, everywhere she's gone, she's just wrought destruction. She's one of those people whose hands are just bloodied, in Macbeth, Lady Macbeth's language, by her associations with corruption. So if it isn't Bosasa, it's something else. Nomvula is just crooked, crooked, crooked. And I wait for them to... The problem with this, the Commission of Inquiry, right, is it's not actual evidence-led stuff. It's just people giving testimony. Like, she should really be tested on this stuff. She should be cross-examined on it, like you would in a court of law. But that's not going to happen.
But wasn't that the whole point of her showing up, was that she wants to be able to cross-examine?
Agreed.
She wants to be able to have her person cross-examine him.
Well, I'd love to see that. That was the judge's condition.
Yeah. If you want to cross-examine somebody that is testifying about you or things related to you, then you have to submit yourself to the commission too.
You know what she sounds like? Yeah, you know what she sounds like? I don't know if you have any friends or people you've known in your life who have been coddled and are, in my case, the people I know that are unbelievably wealthy, that have never heard the term, hey, you are revolting. Your behavior is revolting. Like, they've never, it's never come to them. Yeah.
No one's actually given them that kind of feedback.
Yeah. All they've ever heard is, yes.
Anything you want.
Exactly. She sounds, and all of the cadres sound like this. It's like nobody's ever sat with them and go, you are revolting. You as a person. So not the ANC, not the things around you. When you sitting there stealing hundreds of millions a year.
No one's given them honest feedback.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
they've
always been in a position where other people needed them. So they say flattering things. You could see this with, you know who was famous for this, was Balegambete. Because she was always like horrified when someone would say something terrible about her. It's like, oh, how could you say that about me?
Yeah.
In all of this, I'm just thinking about in season 6, episode 4 of the year 2020, I think we're going to escalate to a point where it is the return of Gavin Watson. And he says, screw all of you. I'll tell you what really happened.
he'll turn out not to be dead after all. Let's see, because you remember that mysterious death on the highway. Anyway,
he'll roll up there with that Corolla.
Like Stefano Tamera.
Yeah. Let's quickly get to the last headline for this morning, and this is a fascinating story, a little bit further afield. Actor Johnny Depp threatened to kill ex-wife Amber Heard many times, she has claimed. She described a 3-day hostage situation in which she claimed Mr. Depp was on a drug and alcohol binge. Johnny Depp, 57, is suing the publisher of The Sun over an article that referred to him as a wife beater, but the newspaper maintains it was accurate. Johnny denies 14 allegations of domestic violence in which a group of newspapers is relying for its defense. Ms. Heard took the witness stand at London's High Court on the 10th day of the case, and her written witness statement was submitted. In it, she accused him of verbal and physical abuse, including screaming, swearing, issuing threats, punching, slapping, kicking, headbutting, choking, as well as extremely controlling and intimidating behavior. Mr. Depp, according to Ms. Heard, has a unique ability to use his charisma to convey a certain impression of reality, and he's very good at manipulating people. He would blame all his actions on a self-created third party instead of himself, which he often called the monster.
Oh, he's cuckoo.
Yeah, well, she's also cuckoo. I mean, It's just amazing. When I say he was dark, she said, he had a violent and dark way of speaking. The way he talked about our relationship being dead or alive and telling me that death was the only way out of the relationship.
Wow. Didn't she have an orgy with Elon Musk?
Don't know.
Yeah, that happened. No, that's out.
Well,
That's out. That happened. I'm telling you something that happened and is out.
What if it is true? What does that have to do with the court case?
Oh, he's the dark one. I didn't push him to anything. I'm fine. Come on, guys. Let's wait it out. Let's hear what Amber did. I mean, if she had an orgy with Elon Musk, you can be certain. People that have orgies, they don't just have one.
But all of this is so embarrassing. All of it's so embarrassing. You know, I was just talking about Katharine Hepburn, who would never give an interview, who was mysterious. And you know, Hollywood in those days was something wonderful and mysterious and amazing and exciting.
Glamorous.
And now you've got Johnny Depp's entire personal life being poured out, like emptying the bucket of shit over his career. There's nothing sexy about this.
There's so many things going on with this Johnny Depp Amber story. Although Mulelo, I don't care how many bloody orgies she has, it does not give Johnny Depp the right to ill-treat her.
Yeah,
it's her fucking pussy. It's allegedly. Her body. She can do whatever she wants.
Johnny Depp allegedly.
Yeah. He allegedly hit her, and she allegedly was unfaithful. But I mean, I agree with you, Pumi. But the whole thing is so distasteful.
It is. All of it is unsavory. All of it. All of it. Johnny, her.
The unfortunate thing about all of these things playing themselves out in gruesome. Under the bright lights, in gruesome detail for all of us, is that even where people have got a real problem, we no longer know how to decipher, how to untangle it all, you know, how to unscramble the egg. Mm. I was saying to Sia just before, last week I was very flippant about Kanye West. But this morning, and most of us waking up now would probably not have seen it yet, but because I've been awake since 4, he has been live unraveling live on Twitter.
Yeah.
On Twitter over the past hour and a half, so from about 4:30-ish.
Give me an update. What's he been tweeting about?
He has been tweeting. Everybody by now has seen him and that awful rally, his presidential rally, trying to get on the ballot, right? And him breaking down and
talking about like how he and Kim wanted to abort North, but then they changed their mind and
what?
So over the past hour, he has then been tweeting about how Kim and Kris Jenner are coming to him to after he cried about his daughter. They're trying to get him, they're coming to him with the doctor and to get him arrested or confined. And then he tweeted, if he goes to jail like Nelson Mandela, people must know why. And then he tweeted, everybody knows that Get Out, the movie, is based on his life.
Oh,
and
my God.
Kris and
Isn't
Kim.
Get Out is that movie where basically your blackness is stolen away by like vampiric white people, right?
I don't even find this amusing or entertaining anymore. He's not okay. He must just.
He is having a real life psychotic
breakdown.
Incident.
Yeah.
On Twitter, he's live tweeting it, and people are finding it as entertainment. From the comments alone, the way that people, so very similar to how the newspapers are splashing young Amber and Johnny Depp's marital demise,
mm-hmm.
people are finding it as entertainment. The number of people who, so Kanye West is obviously trending, thousands and thousands of people commenting and liking and following him, and all that thing does is it feeds the monster too, right? Yeah. It feeds the monster. So Kanye thinks whatever's happening in his mind is amplified by all the people that are,
but isn't
that are
this,
giving him this.
Isn't this the most
support?
Appropriate way for someone in the Kardashian family to have a meltdown? They have to do everything publicly. Otherwise, it doesn't count. And we know this guy's got problems. I mean, you know, a lot of people have problems. Not everyone, but they say 1 in 3 people has mental health issues. And Kanye absolutely has had them for the longest time. I mean, you know, he's got issues around his mother because he was raised by her as a single mom, and he was devastated when she died. He hasn't coped very well emotionally with a lot of the things in his life. He presents this very confident stage persona, but if you listen to what he's saying, he's actually a frightened child. And this is the case for lots of people in public discourse who present themselves as one thing, but in reality, they're something completely different. And again, I want to contrast this with Katharine Hepburn, who I was watching on a YouTube clip last night. There was a woman of genuine confidence who had gone through, you know, she found her brother hanged, and she was there in the early years of Hollywood, and she had this really, really interesting life. But she came from a position of genuine confidence and then didn't allow the press in. And you've got Kanye, who comes from a position of fake confidence, and he does let the press in, and all it's doing is damaging him more. He should be isolating. He should be seeking help, and he should be doing this privately. The fact that he's unraveling publicly means ordinary people, who are probably worse off mentally than him in some cases, are looking at this, as Pumi says, as entertainment. So nobody's winning out of this. No one.
So I don't know if Pumi was headed this way, but it's an indictment more on us as a society.
Yes,
absolutely.
Couldn't agree more.
I feel sorry for this guy. I really do, because his story is not unique in terms of the suffering that he must be going through. We're watching him in real time break down. There are lots of people who go through similar things, but this has been turned into a soap opera.
And the laughing and the jeering and the memes and the name calling and all of that, not giving any help.
No, but always by people who are probably, I mean, they're certainly less important people. They certainly have made less of a contribution to humanity than Kanye West has. I mean, the hubris of some people to go online and to say, yeah, look at Kanye melting down, when they themselves are worthless, and there are lots of worthless people in the world.
Are we ready for the philosophical lesson?
Go on, let's have... here it is. It's time for Mbulelo's philosophy lesson for this morning. In time, because we've got like 2 minutes before we get to 7 o'clock. So here it is. Mbulelo, do you want your music?
We can have it either way.
All right.
So Aristotle used to say, so people always wondered why the Grecians, all of their plays were tragedies, right? Mm-hmm. Violence, whatever. And so Aristotle would ask, why do we do this? Are we monsters? Because people would keep coming for these death and incest and whatever. And what he said is, we're not monsters. What that does when you suspend the belief and you have the fourth wall, it serves the function where you can observe that you're capable of being that monster yourself, but you don't have to deal with it. So it is very important for people to see what they're capable of at arm's distance. Mm-hmm. That you're capable of being a monster yourself. You're fragile yourself. So the attraction to a Kanye situation in the Greek tragedy framework is that we are capable, we are on the precipice of being Kanye ourselves. And that's why it's so interesting to us. But that's in our subconscious. So that is Aristotle.
It's so weird that it doesn't work on the flip side as much. We don't look at the greats, and we don't look at innovation, and we don't look at smart minds and think, oh yeah, let me aspire more to be like that. But we rather look at the low and the trashy and the murders.
The shadow person aspires to the shittiness, actually. The shadow version of ourselves, and many people have absolutely no real confidence. They have a very poor self-esteem. They have low self-worth. And watching someone like Kanye West, it's Schadenfreude. I mean, just look up the word. Schadenfreude describes so much of what we're seeing on social media these days. Schadenfreude, a Munchausen by proxy syndrome almost. that you also see, these are things that psychologists have already unpacked. It's just that some of us are unaware of them. You can describe a lot by these things, and you can see a lot of very weak, very reptilian human behavior when you observe the way people behave on social media. I mean, genuinely, I think that if you've started name calling and joined in and become one of the hysterical people who's enjoying Kanye West's meltdown, I think you really should be removed from social media. You should remove yourself, ideally, but you know, those people will not. But you've shown yourself to be of such a paucity of value and self introspection and the ability to be objective about anything, that you almost have embarrassed yourself to the point where your social media should be cut to the root and you should be forced to start again.
But having said that, my mom always says, don't play the victim. Kanye West, you've got your problems, but don't play the victim.
Yeah.
Everybody must at some stage say, I did this. And he said some things. If you're going to say those things, I'm sorry, when the cards come falling down, I can't handle people who play the victim. So don't play the victim. Do not play the victim. No. Don't do that. Too late now.
Not play the victim. And then you can always also say, well, maybe Kanye's done enough. And maybe what he's really hinting at here is that he's now, you know, announced himself as a U.S. presidential candidate. Now his life really has reached an apex. And now he's unraveling, and maybe on the way down, it's time for him to take his own life. Because that could be the solution. No, I mean, seriously, like, sometimes that's the best way to end the novel.
Then
the novel ends with a big boom. Everyone goes, oh, my God, what a story. But, of course, that's not going to happen.
Sia.
Sia's horrified. But if I were directing this play, if I were writing this play, I would say this is the perfect point at which Kanye commits, you know, self-immolation.
It's not a play. It's a tragic real life.
Yeah, but I'm just speculating. If I were in charge of this narrative, to make it a really great story, it needs to reach
a
climax.
How about just exit stage left?
But that's what I'm saying. So quietly go home and overdose. It doesn't have to be a dramatic death.
No. let him find some beautiful plant in Iceland that he can use to thread into his clothing line. He moves to Iceland, he creates some
that's boring
igloo, and he just never uses social media or comes to the public eye again.
That's boring.
I would say the only way it really finishes properly, he starts a cult and then they end up eating him or something like that.
That could be
the only way from here.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's all
see the guy suffer.
Let's all think about how we could make the Kanye story come to a nice conclusion. Because really, I think he's done all he could. All right. We have much more to do this morning, and your calls and your thoughts and your messages are welcome on 0797482090. Lots of interesting stuff happening. Bulelo will tell us what's happening on Cliff Central Sport as well, and we're going to be joined by Ronan Ayres, who's the founder and CEO of Student Village, to talk about what is happening in lockdown and what millennials are doing, how they're emerging as our leaders now, because he's published an article that discusses how millennials are teaching the rest of us how important it is to feel for others who are marginalized. Well, I don't believe any of this, of course. I'm going to challenge him on all of it, because I think millennials are just trying to be popular with their friends. I don't think they actually care about this stuff. I think they're extremely thin-skinned and vapid and quite insubstantial. But we'll argue about this with Ronan.
And then, I'm sorry to be this person, major development in the Ghislaine Maxwell saga yesterday. Major.
Tell me more.
Let me give you a teaser. Someone was shot and someone was killed.
Oh, Jesus. Yes, I saw this
yesterday.
This is big. We need to get to this.
Ooh.
Very big. All right. So very, very important. Stick around, because you don't want to miss any of this stuff.
CliffCentral.com.